So, hello everyone, welcome to my talk, how could open source and vocational education work? And it's already marked with a question mark because sadly I don't have all the answers, but it's also an invitation for discussion and ideas. For everybody who isn't aware, vocational education means that those people have already finished normally school, like secondary school, but they are not going to university. They are doing an education in combination of a school part and a part in a company, and it's in Germany quite a traditional system, as well in Austria and also in many other areas. And I think we should be aware more there, because the reasons I will just give you in some seconds. So I will talk a little bit, who am I, so that you understand my background and what motivates me, and also what are my resources for that and so on. So just that you get a feeling, so what is the setting? For the same reason, I will also talk a little bit about who are the apprentices, or who is our target group, so who do we want to reach here? Yeah, why it matters. Besides the obvious reason why it always matters, maybe some more specific reason why I think it matters for this target group. Yeah, then a little bit of a more generic part, where could we now use open source from a high level perspective? And then I want to finish up with some concrete examples. So who am I? Yeah, this is now a company slide, but why have I included it? Because it tells you, hey, I work at a company, meaning I do the education while I work my company job. And many companies, to be quite honest, they are on their way to trying to be more open source, but they are not there yet. Therefore, we don't have like the perfect infrastructure. Not everybody works at a company that was founded with open source, so you're somewhere in between and you're on the way. So maybe you have not the perfect setup from the beginning, but you're trying to get there. So this is the background, basically. Me personally, I have used open source software kind of always because my father used it. But that's not true for everybody who's doing an apprenticeship as well, right? So I need to take that one in account. I also studied computer science. That is also not true if you do vocational education, so I need to consider that one as well, so not to apply my own biases there. I came more into OSS there, like actively being more aware and contributing as well. I personally also mostly work for embedded Linux distributions, meaning, okay, this is where I have my knowledge and where I can teach more. There, I'm also working at the moment at my company, Electrobit. But in this company, I also take care of our apprentices. And this brings it all together a little bit, my open source background and the apprenticeship background. So two different directions. And now the questions, hey, I want to teach them. Can I just teach them the same way I was taught? Probably not. That will not work. So who are they now? Who are we talking about? So first of all, how many learn computer science via vocational education? Those are German numbers, but those are the numbers I have available. And I know that in Austria and in other countries, it's looking proportionally with the amount of people living there in a similar direction. But those are numbers, and here you see that, for example, in 2022, more than 40,000 people were in vocational education, and this normally takes like 3 years. So if you think, okay, every 3 years, around 50K, this sums up if you have every 3 years, 50K, and it's also trends are rising, so maybe in 30 years you have 500,000 people, and you're teaching them something with respect to computer science, and they're neither in high school nor in universities. So of those people, normally you have a 1-to-10 ratio between male and female, maybe something to also consider where to improve, and also to consider how to choose your topics. So what is the educational background normally? So normally they have something that is equivalent to either A levels, that's half of them, or most of them finished like 10 years of schooling and then got the diplomas there. You have some that are basically not graduated, but that is a minor number. So all around this makes them to 15 to 19 years old. So not like 12-year-olds, but also not like 25. But it also means when you take a look at their educational background that you cannot expect them to speak perfect English, that you can expect more or less English, maybe very little, that you cannot expect them to be too self-reliant, too self-organized, but it also means you cannot expect them to behave like 12-year-olds or to behave like primary school students. So you're somehow in the middle of all that. And to be honest, I think the middle of all that is an overlooked area. We have, and I will give more examples about that later. So what do you think those people, if you ask them when they start their learnings, what do you think, how many of them know what open source is? Maybe just raise one finger per 10%. So 10% would be one finger. How many do you think would know? So we have 10%, 20% know, 10%, 20, 30, 0. Okay, that's not so deep, dark as it is, you see. I've asked around, and half of them actually know, or think they know. Next question is, can you name an open source license then? Can you make it more concrete? Let's try again the same exercise. Yeah, you know, it's around 75%. Always plus or minus 2 or 3%. Okay, but last question. You think you can name an open source license? 25% still think, yeah, hey, I can name this and this one. And then he says, okay, MIT, for example. And then you ask him, yeah, and anyone, do you know what does this imply then? What is this implying then? And how many do you think that know? 10? 0? 10? 10? 0? Okay, I had found one who knew, and this, because I always rounded up and down, I gave 95, but to be honest, it's 99. But yeah, because I've did a T on 5. So they have they have some feeling that it exists, half of them, but it's rather unconcrete. So already there we know more. Okay, so this is who we are talking about, but why does it now matter? Hey, consider you are starting a job in a company and you're going there first day, you got a company device, you're booting it for the first time and you see, oh, that's a Windows laptop. You take it, you think, okay, no props, hey, I'll go to the IT department because I want to follow the rules, it's a new company and so on. And they say, hey, could I have, maybe would it be possible to have any Linux distribution instead? And you can get this answer, or you can get a, excuse me, what? No. I think this is why it matters, for example. So it matters for us also, because, hey, they will be future IT specialists. And often those roles in the IT departments and so on that decide on such topics are filled with people who did vocational education. So what you teach them about it is relevant, because they will make decisions like what operating system to use, how is your server infrastructure looking, and so on. It's often chosen by people with such a kind of background. So what do you want to use? Well, the people who are deciding that, let's see what background they have. Then, hey, maybe they are trying to teach them something. Well, we have access to open source education resources. This is as in always in open source, great to share with others. We can save time. It makes them more independent because I don't know everything. I've told you before, I have an embedded Linux background, but they maybe want to specialize in something widely different. How should I ever teach that? I don't have the knowledge. Would it not be great to use a resource there that teaches them that? And yeah, in the end, hey, that's are just other contributing IT guys in the future. Why should we leave them out? It's same as for everybody, right? So why does it matter now for them? So have you ever programmed something with a closed source API and you have really hated it? You have not found any concrete description. You thought there's a weird bug and there was no progress at all and you were like frustrated. Why is this not working? I see agreeing faces. How much fun do you had? I don't let you estimate because I know it's like that. Zero. How much do you think you learned while you had that zero fun? That you don't have fun with closed source API, maybe you have learned. But what I want to say is, while fun is not needed to learn something, you can also learn through pain. It makes learning in a more self-positively influencing circle. If you can share and learn in a collaborative way, you feel empowered because you have all the information, you can be creative. We have just seen before creative shapes, for example. You also have a sense of responsibility because you can find the things yourself and you feel independent then. And lastly, you're also preparing for the future of work because if you're an IT person who doesn't know anything about open source yet, well, you're probably in the wrong job. So I think that's itself positively influencing cycle for them also to learn from and with open source. Okay. We have, I would say we have three main areas where they now could use open source. We can enable them to use it as users. So we can say, okay, yeah, well, they're getting a development client that is coming with an open source OS, with an open source mail client, with all of that, their basic equipment, their basic environment that they can use as users. We have the situation that they can use, of course, open source resources for learning, what open source is, because as we saw before, there's some need. But lastly, and those education takes 3 years. 3 years. I think we should also encourage them to become contributors, not just consumers. If you learned computer science for 3 years, there should be the possibility also to contribute, not just to learn and to consume here. So for users, okay, we need to enable them. If we don't provide them any way, shape, or form to use in a compliant or company-approved way open source, they cannot do it. A 16-year-old will not just do it on his own. We need to do that. We need to enable them, and we need to ensure them that they have that. For learners, I think it's a little bit of a challenge to find the fitting resources. This challenge is still widely open, I would say. And for contributing, yeah, it's how to enable them. You cannot expect them to just do it out of their own. So now for learning. Yeah, so there is a curriculum and it's telling basically always, yeah, well, teach what open source is. Teach about licenses, otherwise there's nothing there. But nobody says we cannot use open source material for teaching, so nobody forbids us as well, right? So that's no matter. So for teaching what open source is, and teach about licenses, I like to say, yeah, okay, we can teach them as normal university students. They are in the same plus or take 2 years age group, but make it a little bit more engaging, make it a little bit more beginner friendly. Why not start with a game? And maybe you have seen it already, and it's not from me, but it's from the Open Culture Foundation. They are there with a stand, also in the other, I think in the K building, and they have a great game, for example, that explains it very nicely what open source and open source ecosystems are. So always a good idea, hey, can I teach it as I would teach normal university state students and add something on it? The link there is to the game where you can print it as well. So then how could we maybe use it for learning programming? And there I see a big gap, to be quite honest, because I mean we have nice stuff like Scratch, it's a visual programming language, and I think it's not for the appropriate age group. I know that you can do great things with it, but especially 15 to 19 year olds, they feel like adults, and sorry, it has a kid-like aesthetic. It's out of aesthetic reasons for them. It will not work. They feel not taken seriously. You need to take them more seriously, otherwise they will think, okay, sorry, what I'm doing here. It will not work. What works okay-ish is stuff like Hedi for the first years, for the first few weeks, but it's not going too much in depth. Then there's a bunch of open source material for university students, and that's normally too challenging. Also because it's normally in English and we have the language barrier. It's only for very, very talented apprentices, so that wouldn't be the norm. And besides of all those visual programming languages are existing, there are of course more than just programming knowledge needed to become an IT specialist. So sadly, I think those materials are all not really a fit, or only a very partial fit or not. So how could they, and I come then later to my concrete examples, how could we enable contributions? Well, as with everything, we need to answer the question, how can I do it? Where can I do it? What can I do that? And how not to be afraid to speak to strangers. How that could look, I'll give a kind of concrete example in just a few minutes. So how to enable contribution? Well, teach them as normal. Teach them, if needed for a concrete thing, to open a pull request. But do it hand by hand. Just literally sit next to them on the desk. If they are afraid, practice internally. Let them do a contribution to any internal code in the same fashion. But also practice externally. For example, there's first contributions on GitHub where you can just add your name to a file and raise a PR. It's nothing. But then they have already done this process like once, and it's accepted there. It seems like nothing, but it is helpful. Maybe your own open source software could be a great first choice, because then you are the maintainer and they are not afraid, hopefully, of you. And otherwise, of course, always we're interested. In principle, of course, what? You're starting small, spelling, small bugs. But there's also a thing they need to do, just as university students, a final thesis. This is always also something where a bigger open source contribution could be an option. Now, two concrete examples. First, a concrete example for teaching here, Git. So normally, I like to start with a thing in German. It's called Fachunterricht, but it's basically a technical presentation. Where you introduce a topic, you give background information, you explain a topic, you should give it yourself. Recordings won't work. Yeah, you should give it yourself and in person. There, of course, we can use open source if we just use an open source presentation. I mean, that's tons out there. Then you could, for example, continue good with a game. For Git, there are two nice examples here. And they can then just use maybe the rest of the day after the presentation to play around a little bit with it. Then I normally like to add a practice session. Either you find online already some good material, or you need to come up with something yourself there. It depends, but you can always try to find something already or create something for others to use in future. And lastly, you need to use it as, of course, your newfound knowledge. There I always would recommend to provide further resources. So in the Git example, you could of course provide the Git book or any other additional material. And yes, you need to provide the references and the material where they can learn more, because searching online and finding the right search terms is hard. It's hard if you don't know what you're looking for. Spell it really out. Make it as explicit as possible. And now, lastly, how could a concrete plan to contribute to open source now look? So this is a rough plan for an apprentice who's doing a final thesis to an open source project we have. I expect that the contribution will be around, give or take, 1,000 lines C++ code. So a little bit, I would say. It's not too little, not too much. But still, I would say a nice sized contribution. So first of all, I have split it here to a little bit of a timeline. You have initiate versus help. We start, of course, first with a topic. So what do you now really want to contribute? There you should at least initiate the idea finding process. Either then there is an idea already, or you can also just give the topic if you have something nice, something doable in mind. And it should be relevant. It shouldn't be just like some code that will never be used. You should give them a topic where they have the feeling, hey, others will use it and it's cool, so that they can also be motivated in future then. Then once you have a topic, the first step is of course to help them with the environment and so on, to building the software, to test it, to play around a little bit with them. And then my next step was to introduce to the maintainers. Even before any work started, there of course it's ideal if you know the maintainer, so that he's just a call away. It was not an internal maintainer, but I know him nonetheless, so he was just a call away, and I could set up a meeting like, hey, he would like to make a contribution, this and this is the topic, and then there's already some kind of less reason to be afraid, because you talked and you saw, hey, the other persons there are also humans, hopefully. So, and then once you have that done, I would give some time so that a concept can be written and also then discussed with the upstream maintainers. And then just gradually, as you normally do with software, give time to implement some subparts, give feedback also some internally first. And then once all the subparts are done and all the feedback is addressed, yeah, you can raise your Git send mail, you can raise your PR, and then you're there. The contribution is in process. Then, of course, any review comments and so on, where help is needed, you go over them with that. You don't let them answer there alone if they need your help. But with that, contributions are more lengthy, but I mean, I think a first contribution is always more lengthy. And of course, not all the steps will always be needed, but next contribution could be more independent, and a third contribution maybe while I'm completely independent from my help already. And that already was my presentation, and I think time's also up.
1 minute left.
1 minute is left. One question more. Sorry, come again.
Is there vocational education in development in Germany?
Yes. Yes, and not only in Germany, also in other European countries. Yes.
I got the impression that a
there exists, and I think many people don't know, and this is why I decided to give this talk.
Sorry, I misunderstood.
No. Yes.
Maybe I didn't look hard enough, but I couldn't find anything.
I've looked now 3 years, and there's not much out there. And I think this is really a gap, because we are looking so much at younger children, and then again at university students. And I think it's also a little bit of a mindset problem that we only can imagine that people out from universities are doing computer science related job, and that's just wrong. That's not the reality. Yes?
I'm also an open source software maker, Zim. You've not indicated in the slideshow. Do you know Zim?
Zim.
Zim JavaScript. So I think JavaScript is a good way for all the ages of the children to learn coding, creativity apps, and VR. You can do 3D, walking with VR glasses. So I would like to see it in the slideshow also, next to Healy and all that stuff. Do you know Zim?
I don't know it personally. And if it is JavaScript based, so he the question was, if Sim is known, it's a JavaScript based, yeah. And while I don't know it, I would look into it. I think that we also need to teach more than just JavaScript based languages. I've mentioned before that I work for embedded Linux distribution. Only teaching them JavaScript will not make them fit for the job. Yeah, but I'm working, okay, I understand your point, but I'm working for embedded Linux distribution. This involves, for example, board bring up, hardware bring up, stuff in C, and so on. Sorry,
that's
yeah.
For university, yeah, maybe yes, add on. So I work together with Simone and the vocational training. So in Germany, the vocational training is structured, there's a company part and a school part. So they have a fixed part that everyone is learning. And then they have a company part where you learn specific on the job.
In the job.
Yeah, so and in our case, we are more focused on embedded Linux. I mean, they also learn Python. When they are in an AI company, they are learning JavaScript and all that stuff. And I know they have also JavaScript and that stuff in school. But as a company, we have not the resources. And we are not, our goal is not to teach them JavaScript, because we want them to be Linux, C++, and so that they fit in the end to our needs. And this is the goal from the vocational training, but they have this general part so that they can also go to another company where they then can do web app and all that stuff, so that they are not bound to a company. So for your understanding why.
And I get your point, and I don't want to dismiss it. And learning a programming language in an open source way or fashion is cool, but I think an IT specialist is more than just knowing one programming language. He also needs the ecosystems, the methods, the tools, and so on. So therefore, I think we have at least the gap there, and I invite everyone to think about that further, and I think we need to have more ideas. And with that, my time is sadly up. I thank you all, and I wish you a nice next talk.